This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of January 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 18th of January 2019, which this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. Your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent, standing in for Ros Lydiard. The main headlines this week: new museum on the cards for city, ex-college teacher in court over abuse allegations, and footballer Lee supporting wife for new ballet show. So Claire, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
New museum on the cards for city. Cultural Trust looks at sites in the Silver Hill area for new attraction. A new museum could be coming to Winchester as part of a major regeneration project, it has been revealed. The new site is being looked into by Hampshire Cultural Trust, HCT, the organisation that looks after the county's historical and cultural artefacts and would celebrate the city's Anglo-Saxon heritage. It would follow any archaeological work carried out under the City Council's Silver Hill 2 scheme, officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR, project. A spokesman for HCT told the Hampshire Chronicle, "Winchester is one of our finest English cities. It is the ancient capital of England, established by King Alfred as the centre of his kingdom of Wessex. It is where the creation of Anglo-Saxon England began. This story of England's lost capital is one of international importance that needs to be told and celebrated. Our intention is to connect Winchester's outstanding heritage offer and create a new immersive museum experience where stories come together and are brought to life for the community and the many tourists who come to our city. The excavated archaeology and that which remains hidden underneath the city streets are the most important elements of this story. The proposed new museum provides us with the opportunity to reveal and share this with everyone. Our aim is to undertake a professionally run archaeological excavation during construction, which will involve local communities, schools, and universities across the city. The subject of archaeology has been a hotly debated topic within the wider regeneration scheme. As previously reported, a row broke out in the spring following the release of a report from the newly formed Archaeology Advisory Panel. The report advised against digging in the city centre due to the risk of damaging historically important material. The report was defended by panel chairman and renowned expert Professor Martin Biddle, who said suggestions of digging up the area impractical and ill-informed. After its release, nearly 120 people, including City Councillor Kim Gottlieb and General Sir Anthony Walker, chairman of the Winchester Deserves Better campaign, signed a letter calling for the site's archaeology to be properly excavated and evaluated. Details of the possible new museum are few and far between, due to the early stage of the proposal, which was revealed to the Chronicle by City Council leader Caroline Horrell. Councillor Horrell confirmed the museum would be based in the CWR area, adding, "We will be supporting a museum on the site." That's despite the River Park Leisure Centre site becoming available for development within the next few years. It had previously been suggested that the site could have a cultural use, whether that be an arts venue or museum, when the new leisure centre is built in Bar End. The CWR area covers 4.5 hectares of land at the bottom of High Street and encompasses Upper Brook Street in the west, Friars Gate and Middlebrook Street car park to the north, St John's Almshouses and Lower Brook Stream to the east, and the Broadway and Lower High Street to the south. A spokesman for HCT confirmed the city's existing museums, such as the City Museum on the Square, the oldest purpose-built museum in the country, would not be impacted.
Ex-college teacher in court over abuse allegations. A former Winchester College music director is due to appear in court later this year accused of historical sex offences. Malcolm Archer, 66, of High Street Odeon, appeared at Chelmsford Crown Court last week to deny the one charge of indecent assault and one charge of committing an act of gross indecency. The alleged offences involved a boy under the age of 16 and were reported to have been committed between 1978 and 1979 in the Chelmsford area. Archer, previously director of chapel music at Winchester College and formerly of Edgar Road, had been at the private school for 10 years before leaving in November 2017. He's due to face trial on July the 15th alongside Kenneth Francis, 71, of Akasaka in Tokyo. Francis denied 13 counts of indecent assault and 4 counts of committing an act of gross indecency when he too appeared at Chelmsford Crown Court. The alleged offences involved 4 boys under the age of 16 and were reported to have been committed between 1972 and 1979. Francis, a retired teacher, lived and worked in the Chelmsford area at the time. A spokeswoman for Winchester College said the alleged offences are unconnected with the college and occurred many years before Mr Archer's employment at Winchester. This notwithstanding, as soon as the school was made aware of the allegations, it treated them with the utmost seriousness, in full cooperation with the relevant authorities and in accordance with the standards of a stringent safeguarding culture. Mr Archer was suspended from employment and later left the college. We shall, of course, continue to offer the authorities every assistance in their inquiries, she added.
Footballer Lee's supporting wife for new ballet show. Football pundit Lee Dixon swapped his TV studio for Winchester High Street when helping his wife promote her new ballet. Yolanda's new work, called York Dance Project 20, will be at the Theatre Royal in February, and Lee is set to bring along some of his ex-Arsenal teammates. The couple were at the Buttercross on Monday, handing out leaflets and telling those who stopped about the show. Lee, ex-England international and Arsenal legend, said, "I go to all of Yolanda's dances. My favourite has to be when I saw her at Winchester Cathedral back in 2016. It was a fitting venue for something so spiritual. Saying that, there's just something we really like about Winchester. I'm going to be bringing Ian Wright and David Seaman down to the show on February the 12th, so be aware the city is going to be infiltrated with ex-gooners." He explained that he supports his wife as often as possible and would be speaking to shop staff in the High Street about giving leaflets to customers. Lee said, "I like to get to as many of her rehearsals as I can too. Seeing her train so intensely takes me back to my own career. I'm kind of envious that I can't do all that anymore, and even more so that I can't do the splits." I'll tell you what, though. More and more football teams are integrating dance into their training routines. Dance has all the qualities to make it an integral part of athletics. Lee and Yolanda revealed that Winchester is one of their, quotes, favourite touring spots. Yolanda said, "We absolutely love it here. We come a couple of times a year, whether that's just when I'm touring or just for a nice day out. It's great to be able to take a couple of hours out of rehearsals to come and talk to everyone and to see the city. It shows that the ballet isn't just something on a poster, but a work of art from actual people. I hope that the people we speak to come to the dance and enjoy it all the same. Tickets can be purchased at the Theatre Royal website or by calling the box office 01962 840 440. When asked about Saints, Lee said, "Well, they got off to a slow start, but Hasenhüttl is a good manager. The players seem to relate to him and have that different look in their eyes, as if they're up for attacking games. They're definitely pressing in games differently, but there's a long way to go."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum, and then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Apps. John Apps, who died peacefully on the 24th of December, aged 82. Bell, Brian Bell, died peacefully on the 5th of January, aged 56. Bell, Valerie Alice Christine Bell, died on the 2nd of January. Capewell, Jane Capewell, née Hassel, died peacefully on the 5th of January, aged 65. Golding, Sheila May Golding, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. Petford, Shirley Petford, died on the 1st of January, aged 83. Strong, Eileen Strong, died on the 1st of January, aged 87. Torbett, Keith Torbett, died on the 3rd of January, aged 61. Wade, Gerald Astin Wade, died at home on the 11th of January, aged 89. And Waldron, Anthony Roger Waldron, died on the 8th of January, aged 75. So now we have Christian comment. Claire.
This is headed today, A Question of Identity, and is written by Rosemary A. Baker. This last Sunday was lectionary theme was the baptism of Christ. The gospel reading was the story of Jesus coming to the River Jordan to be baptized by John the Baptist. This was the beginning of Jesus' public ministry. We are told that a dove was seen and the voice of God proclaimed that Jesus was his son. It is doubtful if anyone in the crowd realized the significance of this, or even that John the Baptist did. We have the luxury of the gospel accounts of the occasion and of Jesus' life, and also of 2,000 years of Christian history to help us understand who Jesus was. This morning, walking the dogs, I struck up a conversation with a man who also had two dogs, and whom we had met briefly before. He told me he had retired recently and was taking some time to adjust to his new life. I empathised, as I had recently introduced myself as a retired psychiatrist and a retired Methodist minister, and I wondered if this was who I was or had been. Was I only the past jobs I had done? Who was I now? To add to this, last week I was informed that my criminal record check had lapsed for the Methodist Church, and I needed to renew it in order to be able to preach and administer the sacraments. To enable this to happen, I first had to prove my identity. A list of approved documents had to be provided to be checked by my superintendent minister. My passport has expired, and I do not yet possess a photo card driving license. Applications for these could now be signed by my superintendent minister. Luckily, I have my original birth certificate to verify my date of birth, so fulfilling Category 1. With some difficulty, I managed to produce a pension document and a house insurance certificate. All the other bills and bank statements are online, and printing these off is not admissible. Then I couldn't fill in on the online form without phoning for help. To my annoyance, the form came up with my name, date of birth and address already printed, so they already knew these facts. I didn't have to produce any identity documents to be ordained 20 years ago, and don't recall being given anything to prove that this had happened. Perhaps they didn't think anyone in their right mind would turn up and pretend. The baptism of Christ told people who he was, as ours or our confirmation or receipt into membership for Methodists. In other words, our commitment tell people we are Christians, sons and daughters of God. Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you. Now we're moving on to letters. Richard, I think you've got the first letter.
I think I have.
Thank you.
Rural hazards, says Julia Smith. I was having a post-Christmas catch-up with a friend recently, and she mentioned that her family had been on two Christmas and New Year country walks. They enjoyed them. But the downside was the amount of dog poo they'd encountered en route. These were country lanes, so consequently there was no obligation or regulation for dog owners to remove the offending deposits. But her point was that these were well-used and popular walks for dogs in the area and beyond, so could owners be encouraged to either pick up and remove or at least not leave it in the middle of the track, so that others following them could look and enjoy the views, wildlife, etc., and not have to keep looking ahead to help their children and themselves avoid the hazards. Julia Smith, Wood Lane Close, Bramdean, Alsford.
And this one is entitled The Bright Side. Sir, every week the Chronicle reports on people creating new opportunities in business, in music, on sports fields, in science, in protecting the environment, and in helping others. Last week, the president of the National Farmers Union spoke of grabbing with both hands Britain's chance to reshape food policy after Brexit. This is the kind of positive response we need. There may be temporary disruptions. Enterprising and energetic British people will overcome them and benefit from the new yet uncharted opportunities that arise. What we don't want is to have our hands tied by a bad deal. This from David Abbott, MD, Kingsmere Meadow, Shawford.
This letter is headed Junction Danger. Your picture on page 10 of your January 10th paper about proposed development on Dean Lane illustrates very well why we need to get this junction altered so that traffic coming to and from Tegdown has priority over Dean Lane. I too, like Janet Huxman, have had a near miss with a car swooping out of Tegdown Meads. Dean Lane at that point is only wide enough for one-way traffic, and you often have to stop to let another car through. A halt sign for Dean Lane with a clear view, which Tegdown Meads does not have, would give everyone time to assess the situation with traffic out of Tegdown having priority. Mrs. G.M. Hennigan, Dean Lane, Tegdown, Winchester.
Rosemary Poole questions bus station uses. At a time when the shops in the High Street are crying out for customers, I was sorry to read that it's the intention of the City Council to use the soon-to-be-vacated bus station for a hub for food and retail pop-up businesses. I haven't quite understood why the bus station, centrally situated and built for the purpose, cannot continue to be used as a bus station, and our much-needed and already-threatened Middlebrook Street car park be left for its intended purpose, car parking. Is this not just change for change's sake? I think the Green anti-car movement should be reminded that some of us city residents who do not have the luxury of a bus passing our door and who do not want to drive out to a park and ride facility like to be able to park in the city centre from time to time. And certainly we pay enough council tax. On the subject of empty shops in our high streets, whilst online shopping is being largely blamed, I think our out-of-town supermarkets should take some of the responsibility for selling not just food and drink, but pots and pans, china and cutlery, DVDs, stationery, clothing, bed linen and much else, whilst also providing chemists and dry cleaning and shoe repair services. No wonder the shops in the high street are in trouble. Rosemary Pool, St James Villas, Winchester.
And this is entitled Celebrating Jane. Sir, the proposed sculpture of Jane Austen on the Mirabel lawn of in the Inner Close aims to celebrate the abiding legacy of Britain's most beloved author and her intimate connection with Winchester for the last 200 years. Your letters page only serves to demonstrate the heartfelt devotion of her followers here in Hampshire. We feel none of the memorials inside the cathedral do full justice to her legacy, her books having been translated into over 40 languages worldwide. We cherish a significant Anglican laywoman whose faith richly and deeply informed her work. The sculpture's exact sighting on the lawn is still being considered, and the design of the sculpture has been through three major iterations. There will be at least one other maquette made, taking into account the best critical insights offered since its launch. Works of art cannot be designed by committee. The point of engaging Martin Jennings, winner of the top prize for excellence in public sculpture 2 years in a row, was to give him the creative space to develop and express his own appreciation of Austen. He has done this mainly by responding to the author he has met in reading her novels. The statue is obviously not an attempt to present viewers with a photograph in bronze, but to represent a woman abounding in grace and energy with clear-sighted vision. We are grateful for the comments presented in this paper. Our aim remains to do justice to Jane Austen's memory and to the monumental impact she has made to this city, this county, and the world. This from Canon Dr. Roland Ream, Vice Dean and Canon Chancellor from Winchester Cathedral.
This letter is headed Divided Nation. As I write this letter, I'm experiencing my darkest hour in all of my 70 years. Brexit has divided our country in a manner unknown since the English Civil War. The only difference is that our soldiers are not armed. Friendships have been irrevocably broken by words neither group dares to speak. Some who enjoy European holidays and are looking forward to retirement in sunny Spain are becoming uneasy. A number of our friends were complaining recently about Johnny Foreigner raising prices against us when they were abroad. Hardly surprising, as the pound had dropped to its lowest ebb ever. Our Prime Minister warned her MPs on Monday that a failure to deliver Brexit would be catastrophic for Britain and destroy trust in politics for decades. The horse has already bolted from that stable when so many of our MPs spout half-truths, fake news, so many of which are enshrouded in their own ambitions, with absolutely no care for people. Eunice Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And closer to home, Nick Ray criticises poor decision over cycle racks. Winchester City Council's removal of 15 cycle racks at St Maurice's Covert, chronicled January the 10th, in the very centre of the city because it spoils the view, is a poor decision. Many times during any day, cycle racks at certain locations are often full to capacity. For example, Waterstones and the High Street, City Museum, Dispensary, etc. Winchester needs more, not fewer, racks, both at existing locations and at new locations. Walking the high street on a busy market day is crowded enough. Try doing it with a bike in order to look for somewhere safe to lock it up. This unnecessary act also sends out worrying signals that the council is at best disinterested or at worst hostile to cycling and cyclings. This on the eve of the city's movement strategy transport consultation too. Does this mean a decision has already been taken that cycling, kicked into the long grass in that report already, will never be prioritised? Indeed, the opposite and discouraged in this way? The racks removed are the only ones undercover. They also provide CCTV coverage for security, and it's a central location too. Forbes magazine has written that cyclists spend 40% more in London shops than motorists. Cyclists go into town for a reason, to support local shops and businesses as well as work. The growth of electric bikes also means that not only can the hills of Winchester be flattened out for cyclists, current and future, of all ages, but the people on bikes can carry more from shops too. It also addresses health priorities to encourage an active population and reduce costs to the NHS. Cycling may remain a smaller component of any transport mix, but surely, by encouraging those trips that can be made by bike, the council reduces congestion and pollution from the road. I'm not a bike evangelist, but a car driver too, but one that avoids taking a car into town by using a bicycle whenever I can. So why discourage this? Indeed, can there be any other UK council that is actively reducing provision for cyclists so pointlessly? Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Fulford, Winchester.
And now another change of subject, this one entitled Screen Time. So, I would like to say how much I liked Khalid Aziz's comments in last week's Hampshire Chronicle. I have in fact just read an online article in The Independent, which refers to a survey undertaken at Oxford University, which indicates that getting enough sleep and eating breakfast have a greater effect on the mental health than the amount of screen time. I also read a fair amount of comics, mostly sporting ones. I can still remember some of the stories I read about 40 years ago. I now volunteer my services as a researcher for the Sporting Memories Group, which uses the heritage and history of sport to enhance the lives of people, and a lot of my information is obtained by searching the internet. I also agree that the individual's relationship with food is important. I rarely count the number of calories I consume. I merely endeavour to ensure that in terms of my energy, my expenditure matches my intake. I would say that over the Christmas period I had more Christmas meals than most people, but I also got in a lot of exercise at the same time. This from Malcolm Clark, Lee Road, Eastleigh.
Remainer naivety. I voted Remain in the referendum because given the range and complexity of our European relationships, i.e. economic, cultural, scientific, legislative, the inevitable disruption caused by leaving seemed more problematic than working for radical reform of the EU from within. The subsequent campaigns deteriorated into a soundbite contest, which contributed little to public knowledge. The most serious presentation of a political argument for either option, I read, was from the Leave-supporting Communist Party. 34 pages, no slogans, no pictures. In the end, whichever way people voted, there was ignorance and susceptibility to propaganda on both sides. Now we have the clamour for a people's vote, which, in my view, promises more of the same. Regardless of denials, a majority of the public would see it simply as a rerun of 2016, with the expectation that leavers would see the error of their ways. This is inevitable given that the campaign is led by Remainers wishing to stop Brexit altogether. I think their optimism that this is achievable is naive, to say the least. I had many arguments with leavers from the left, the right, and all shades of political opinion in between. They covered all ages, intellects, qualifications, trades, and professions. None have changed their minds. It is also clear that leavers in the main find the attitude of many Remainers both patronising and insulting. If another referendum takes place, this anger will without doubt be exploited by Brexit politicians, UKIP, who are currently flirting with the far right, and Nigel Farage, who's jumped ship to reinvent himself as the moderate face of Brexit. There is no certainty that a people's vote will produce a different result. Surely the last referendum demonstrated that simple questions on complex issues should be a last resort in the democratic process, not the first. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we're going back in time 100 years, I think, Richard.
We are. 100 years ago, Saturday, January the 18th, 1919. The proposed Winchester War Memorial was sure to provoke controversy, and has provoked it, because it's a bold scheme for new buildings near old ones, and we are nowadays so used to council despair in all matters of architecture that our chief aim is usually not to offend. But the Winchester Memorial Committee have not been content with councils of despair. They have to commemorate the greatest event in our history in which their school has played no small part. And their desire is that it shall be worthily commemorated. And secondly, we mentioned some while ago that Winchester was to be further associated with America by placing of a memorial window in the cathedral. The Dean and Chapter have having given permission for the use of the second bay on the east side of the south for this purpose. There's now been placed on the wall an artistically designed tablet in wood, in black and gold.
And this from 50 years ago, Saturday the 19th, Saturday January the 18th, 1969. The Winchester Hospitals League of Friends will not at present give any financial assistance to the new chapel project at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. This was decided at a meeting of the League at St Paul's Hospital on Tuesday. Miss D. Duncan Lewis, president, told the meeting that it had been the League's intention to provide money for the fittings and furniture for a new chapel, and for this purpose £500 had been set aside. The intention had been to convert the matron's room into a chapel, but there were no longer sufficient funds available to provide alternative accommodation for the matron. The project had to be held over until the money became available. It was proposed to provide a prefabricated building to serve as a chapel in the meantime, and the League's money could be used on this. This would exclude the Selwood donation, which was specifically for furnishing a new chapel. And secondly, an articulated lorry carrying 16 tons of hardboard sheets overturned in Winchester on Monday and completely blocked the junction of Drury Street and High Street for nearly 3 hours. The lorry was on its way from Wales to Portsmouth when it overturned at the Drury Street High Street junction at about 6:30 a.m. And before it could be righted, its load had to be removed and transferred to other vehicles. The driver, Mr. Wallace Trigg of Newport, was uninjured, and none of the surrounding property was damaged.
And from 25 years ago, Friday, January the 21st, 1994, two items. The first, when customs officer at Heathrow seized an entire shipment of reptiles which arrived from Ghana just before Christmas, Marwell Zoo was one of the places they turned to for a suitable home for the animals. This was the largest seizure of reptiles made by customs and certainly the largest seizure of royal pythons. The importation of such reptiles was banned by the EC on December the 1st, 1993. On Tuesday, three members of Marwell's staff went to the quarantine unit at Heathrow, where the reptiles have been kept, to select some animals for the zoo. They returned with 10 West African creeping frogs and 6 royal pythons. The frogs are being cared for by Jeff Reed, head keeper, and will eventually be placed in a tropical exhibit. The pythons are in the zoo's education centre at Marwell Hall. The zoo already has 6 male royal pythons. It's hoped that the 6 which have been chosen are all females, so that in time there can be some royal romances. Sexes will be checked by a reptile and amphibian expert. And secondly, emergency resurfacing work costing more than £30,000 is being carried out at a muddy temporary hospital car park after workers complained about the atrocious conditions. Nurses, doctors and other staff at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital Winchester have arrived at work with shoes caked in mud and have had to have their cars towed out of the fields in the past week. Two fields at the former West Downs School, Romsey Road, are being used by the hospital as a car park, while a multi-storey car park is built at the hospital. Patients and visitors are still able to park at the hospital. But netting which was laid on the ground to make a firmer surface proved useless when mud seeped through the netting. Frank O'Sullivan, Assistant Chief Executive, said, "The exceptional rainfall over the last 2 months," and he said measures were being taken to rectify the situation. Nurses who contacted the Hampshire Chronicle to complain refused to give their names in case it affected their job security. But a ward sister said, "Morale is low enough at the moment as it is. Cars are bogged down in mud, nurses are falling over, and people are getting stuck in the mud. There is concern over the lack of security and the way we're being herded into the car park." She claimed that it was unfair that higher paid staff appeared to be able to continue to park at the hospital. "It's upsetting us. We were told it would include every member of staff, but it seems to be a them and us situation," she said. Now we're back to the present, and I think we have editorial comment. Thank you, Claire.
This is headed "A New Museum for the City Centre." So, a new museum could be coming to Winchester with Hampshire Cultural Trust exploring various options. The Trust, which runs numerous museums across the county, is looking at whether it can develop something in the Silver Hill 2 area, officially known for the moment as the Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme. Such an initiative to celebrate this city's rich history is to be welcomed. Details at this early stage are a bit sketchy, but it could also include the English project's ambition to have a centre that charts the development of the English language from the Germanic tongue spoken by a few thousand people to the global language of today. The project was launched before the Great Recession of 2008-09, but never got so far as finding a building. A trust spokesman denied any new development would affect the existing City Museum on the Square. We shall see. While we are in the vicinity, we also report on the efforts to come up with a new name for the Central Winchester Regeneration Project. This paper has long defended Silver Hill as the best name. It's vivid and has appropriate links with the past, being the name of the historic road that reflected ancient craftsmaking skills in the locality. The City Council appears to still be overly concerned with the fact that the title is somehow sullied by the collapse of the first development scheme.
Thank you. Now we've got first person, Richard.
Yes, we have. This week it's by George Hayter, who says, "I complained, but I'm happy. When I think about England's much-criticised National Health Service, I think about a trip to France I made a dozen years ago. My wife had to work and couldn't come. She entrusted me with the care of our two teenage children during the three-day break to explore historic D-Day sites in Normandy. Me and the kids caught a dawn ferry from Portsmouth. As the ship approached the harbour mouth at Cherbourg, the three of us were standing out on deck when my daughter suddenly and silently slumped. Her face smacked onto the metal deck. The crew advised against moving her and brought blankets. Ambulance staff came aboard and took her to hospital, with my son and I following by car. I was impressed by the French hospital facilities when we saw folding doors to envelop the entire ambulance so that the patient would not be exposed to the weather. Doctors found nothing wrong with her, and we were further impressed by French healthcare when they ordered more and more tests just to make sure. Then they insisted that she should stay under observation overnight, just in case. Next morning, they still wanted to keep her in, finally declaring her fit to go at lunchtime. The thorough approach in France contrasted with my experience at Southampton General Hospital, where my siblings and I agreed an official complaint about our mother's treatment after she died there. Later, we complained to the same hospital about accommodation for a teenage member of the family with leukaemia. I've also been concerned about the shortage of NHS dentists. News footage of patients being nursed in corridors on trolleys has dismayed me further. Yet, despite the NHS's various faults, I see it as a shining national asset. I judge the service overwhelmingly safe and efficient. It's one of the best things about living in Britain, along with Parliament, the BBC and Ordnance Survey. Black marks for bed shortages are only one feature of the scorecard. I reckon most patients are satisfied. The complaint about my mother may have been warranted, but I was satisfied with most aspects of Mum's treatment. Everyone makes mistakes. I hope the complaint helped improve the service. Same with the leukaemia complaint. Doctors and nurses did a wonderful job on the whole, and the patient got better. And maybe I went over the top when I was in awe of the French health service, because figures, admittedly 5 years old, show France spends 9% of GDP on free health, only 1% above the UK, and the French system is not completely free. During my life, most aspects of the NHS have got better, and only a few things have got worse. Authoritative matrons have gone. Fewer staff are English fluent, and sometimes it's hard to park at the Winchester Hospital. But NHS training, equipment and drugs are all better. If you had cancer, would you choose to go back to the 1960s NHS for treatment? With a tooth abscess, would you opt for a 1960s dentist? Fancy a heart op by a surgeon of the 1950s NHS? Didn't think so. NHS quality is climbing. I think we can look forward to even better treatment of everything from diabetes to a detached retina. Improved techniques will range from computer diagnosis to gene therapy. The NHS's financial crisis may never go away because demand is likely to carry on exceeding supply. Hunger for treatment will increase because we will live longer and become less tolerant of illness, discomfort and disability. The NHS's demand for cash will also rise because expensive new treatments are being invented, constantly raising patient expectations. Unfortunately, I can't see Britain's tax system supplying enough cash to keep up. It's harsh being a doctor, exhausting being a nurse. Most of them are diligent professionals. If the supply of them dried up, then the NHS would face a crisis.
Thank you, Richard. And now I think, Peter, you've got a couple of items from Belgara.
I do. Very different ones, too. The first one is entitled Our University's Alumni. Whilst browsing the web pages of a popular online encyclopedia, Wikipedia for those not familiar, Belgarham happened to stumble across an array of famous faces who hail from Winchester. The first shock, perhaps due to the American accent, was actress Lauren Cohan, most commonly known as Maggie Rhee from AMC's hit zombie show The Walking Dead. Cohan, who left the show before the recent mid-season finale of its ninth season, moved to the UK from the States aged 13, before graduating from Winchester University with a degree in drama and English literature. She then toured with theatre company No Man's Land, which she co-founded at the university. Other famous alumni from the university, previously known as King Alfred's College, include religion editor for the BBC, Martin Bashir, who famously interviewed Princess Diana, BBC TV journalist and former junior reporter for the Hampshire Chronicle, Mike Bushell, and comedians Nick Helm and Shappi Khorsandi. The second article is entitled Travelodge Guests' Forgotten Treasures. A six-tier wedding cake, important documents and a pair of vintage roller skates were among the items left behind in their rooms by hotel guests visiting Hampshire during 2018. In addition to the wedding cake, hotel operator Travelodge's annual list of forgotten items includes a politician's speech and paperwork for a racing yacht at its Southampton Central site. At its other Southampton hotel in Lodge Road, where the wedding cake and skates were abandoned, another guest checked out without taking a coin collection. Up the M3 at Winchester, Travelodge guests left a set of gold false teeth, a Jumbo Connect 4 game, a wedding photo album, and a room full of happy birthday balloons. Nearly 19 million people annually stay in one of the UK's 557 Travelodges, and half of those are business customers.
We'll try not to leave anything behind in the studio. Okay, now we move on to what's on. And there's a few items. Chesil Theatre, from the 25th of January to the 2nd of February, have a play called A Bunch of Amateurs. And this follows the experience of a famous ageing Hollywood actor as he visits the UK. He thinks he's booked to play King Lear at Stratford-on-Avon, but actually his agent has booked him into an amateur show in Stratford, Suffolk. It's written by Ian Hislop and Nick Newman, and if you want tickets for that, it's 0333 666 3366. That's 0333 666 3366. At the Guild Hall in Winchester on Saturday the 26th of January at 7 p.m, Michael Frayne is in conversation with John Miller. If you want tickets and information for that, it's 01962 851177. That's 01962 851177. On Thursday the 24th of January at the Hospital of St Cross at 7:30 p.m, there's a talk entitled The Life and Times of Alfred the Great, and that's arranged by the Hampshire Archaeological Dowsers. Admission is £5 on the door. That's Thursday the 24th of January at 7:30 at the Hospital of St Cross. And at the Anvil Basingstoke on Sunday the 3rd of February at 7:45 p.m, there's a concert by the St Petersburg Philharmonic Orchestra, and they're playing Mussorgsky, Shostakovich and Tchaikovsky. And there is also a free pre-concert talk at 6:30. But for all of that, you need to book, and the telephone number is 01256 844 244. That's 01256 844 244. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 18th of January at 0800 and begins at 4:32 p.m. And next Wednesday, the 23rd of January, it ends at 7:55 a.m. and begins at 4:40 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with items of general news. Claire.
Well, this one is about a gentleman who is, excuse me, Surgeon Vice Admiral Anthony Leslie Revel. And it's headed From Dr. No to Service at Winchester Cathedral. Surgeon Vice Admiral Anthony Revel's unstinting support of Winchester Cathedral spanned decades. A long-standing love of choral music blossomed over time into a plethora of roles such as sidesman, pilgrim school governor, chairman of the Winchester Festival, and trustee of the Hampshire International Singing Competition. Given his 6'7" frame, Revel was easy to spot at services and concerts, after which conversations, often conducted in the Wickham Arms, was habitually punctuated by his warm, deep laughter. A generous, jovial man, his innate modesty meant he referred to himself as Dr. Revel for his cathedral duties. Even some close Winchester friends were unaware of his many significant achievements during a 37-year naval career until after his death at the end of last month. Revel, in fact, rose to the pinnacle of his chosen field, serving as Surgeon General to the Armed Forces between 1994 and 1997. This was a time of huge upheaval for Britain's military medical services. But Revel applied his acute intellect, and calm logic to the politically sensitive issues of saving Royal Hospital Haslar from closure and the first wave of claims from personnel suffering from Gulf War syndrome. He would have been knighted, but for then Prime Minister John Major temporarily suspending the usual elevation for all three star senior officers because of the upcoming general election. Anthony Leslie Revel was born in Wimbledon in 1935. A strong dislike of the school cadet corps led him to vow never to enter the military. However, he joined the Royal Navy in 1960 on qualifying as a doctor when a period of compulsory service was reintroduced. His first ship was frigate HMS Troubridge, and while deployed in the West Indies, crew members were extras for the James Bond film Dr. No. When bikini-clad Ursula Andress decided her hips needed that extra something for the scene in which she walked from the sea, Revel gave her a naval white webbing belt and later recalled her as very, very attractive. Encounters with film stars aside, Revel relished life as a ship's medical officer, dubbed a scab lifter, and at the end of 3 years decided to remain in the senior service. He specialised as an anaesthetist and, being too tall for off-the-shelf blue theatre dress, wore bespoke scrubs made from the only available material, which happened to be bright green. Unsurprisingly, he gained the nickname of Jolly Green Giant. A shrewd clinician, Revel, who was single, powered up the ranks to become head of the Naval Medical Services in 1993. He was also honorary surgeon to the Queen between 1989 and 1997, poised to scoop up any guest taken ill at royal receptions. On his retirement, Revel moved to Winchester, where he devoted himself to his cathedral work. He was honorary tour doctor for the cathedral choir, advising and nurturing all involved, said musician Alice Hill. I recall a tour to the Channel Islands, and before setting sail from Guernsey to Sark on very rough seas, he boarded the boat and jokingly reminded us to put our cameras away so as not to photograph an admiral being seasick. This is all about Surgeon Vice Admiral Anthony Leslie Revel, CB, C. St. J., Surgeon General to the Armed Forces, and was born on April the 26th, 1935. He died of cancer on December the 30th, 2018, aged 83.
Rather topical item here. M3 lorry park, wholly false. The UK's transport chief has hit back at claims that the M3 could be closed and turned into a lorry park for the Port of Portsmouth if there's a no-deal Brexit. Chris Grayling, Secretary of State for Transport, says the reports concerning a stretch of the southbound motorway between Winchester and Basingstoke are wholly false. It comes after Liberal Democrat leader Sir Vince Cable said that after a visit to Portsmouth's port, that a 20-mile stretch could be closed to cope with backed-up lorries in the case of a no deal. In a letter to Winchester's MP, Mr Grayling hit back at the reports. He said, it is possible that there could be some freight traffic disruption in Kent in the event of a no deal if additional custom checks were introduced in Calais, Coquel and Dunkirk, where freight services disembark. In the past, the M20 has been closed under Operation Stack as a way of handling freight traffic queues resulting from disruption to the Dover-Calais or Channel Tunnel services. The situation at other ports is very different. Even if there were to be some redistribution of freight traffic from the Dover Strait, we do not expect significant delays resulting from border checks at other EU ports to be a major issue. Highways England's core task is, and will remain, to keep the road network operating as efficiently and effectively as possible. We therefore have no plans whatsoever to close the M3 or any other roads outside Kent in a no-deal scenario. We don't think this would be needed, and if there's any disruption, there are better ways of dealing with this than by closing strategic roads. However, Portsmouth MP Stephen Morgan slammed Mr. Grayling's response, saying 95% of fresh produce in the Channel Islands comes via Portsmouth International Port. Any delay exporting to Guernsey and Jersey under a no deal would cause traffic chaos there and empty shelves within 48 hours over there. At a time of uncertainty for our city and country, the Transport Secretary just doesn't get it. It's time the government engaged with us in Portsmouth and listened to our legitimate concerns. As previously reported, Port Director Mike Sellers said the distance from the freight gates to the motorway was only 13 lorry lengths, and the introduction of any delays onto ferries could lead to lorries backing up onto the motorways. He said attempts to use nearby land as a lorry park and processing area had been thwarted because the MOD refused to release the land, while another site 20 minutes away had been located but did not have the required infrastructure. Mr. Sellers also said the customs infrastructure required would not be in place by the end of March. A Highways England spokesman denied there were any plans to use the M3 as a lorry park.
Now, away from Brexit, this concerns somebody a lot of us would have seen when walking through town, excuse me, and is entitled Chronicling the Tales of a City Musician. Tens of thousands of people know his signature tune. Winchester's best-known busker, Marvin B. Naylor, has entertained people with the theme from The Third Man for 8 years. The tune, from a 1949 thriller starring Orson Welles, is a simple three-note tune that eases its way into your head. Since taking up a pitch on the High Street, he must have played the tune several thousand times. Through that time, busking Marvin has collated a diary of his experiences. Now, for the first time, part of the diary has been gathered in book form. Diary of a Busker, Volume 1, The First 100 Days, published by Skylight Press. Marvin, 56, of Green Hill Road, Fulflood, went onto the streets to busk after he was sacked from his rock group because of his declining hearing. The diary celebrates the people he has met over the years, from local eccentrics to the good, the bad and the ugly, and the occasional person who tries to steal money from his collecting hat. He is ambivalent about writing the diary. I can't stop doing it, and I would like to stop doing it, because it takes a lot of time. I'm a musician, not a writer. It seems the most generous people are the older people, the people who haven't got much money. Members of the clergy, I can count on the fingers of one hand how many times I've got anything from them. People in suits, not very often either. His three most popular songs are The Third Man, Albatross by Fleetwood Mac, and Here Comes the Sun by The Beatles. The book costs £13 and is available from Amazon and from P.G. Wells Bookshop.
Race for Life to Allow Men to Run. This year's Winchester Race for Life will make history by allowing men to run the course as well as women and children. The flagship Cancer Research UK event will be open to anyone wanting to take part in the 5 kilometre run. Georgina Horn, event manager, said, "Our Race for Life events have been woman only since they started over 25 years ago. But we now feel the time is right to open them up so that everyone, women, men and children, has the chance to participate together. We did research into what would be the best for the project and figured that letting more people in was just that. The idea wasn't directly to boost the numbers, but will help." We also have received lots of negative comments about the event being women only, so that with the research helped us come to a decision. For the first time, the charity day will start from the North Walls Recreation Ground next to River Park Leisure Centre on May the 26th. Georgina said, "Our Race for Life events are fun, colourful, emotional and uplifting. They help people with cancer by raising money for research, including clinical trials which give patients in Winchester access to the latest treatments." Last year, over 700 women ran the Winchester Race and raised more than £50,000 for Cancer Research UK. She added, "One in two people in the UK will be diagnosed with cancer at some point during their lifetime. Sadly, this means nearly everyone is touched by the disease, either directly or through a loved one or friend. To make a significant difference in the fight against cancer, we need to harness as much energy and commitment as possible. So what better way than involving everyone in the community in our events? To sign up for the event, visit https://race-for-life.cancerresearchuk.org/ or call 03001 230770. I'll repeat that, 03001 230770.
And a bit of a historical curiosity here. A promise of marriage breached by vendor. This is from the archives for the 19th century from Winchester Assizes. Strangely for a woman determined to vindicate her reputation, Mary Hooper absented herself from court when she brought an action for breach of promise. Hooper was said to have gone to America, and her case at the High Court, which sat in Winchester in 1833, was presented by Sergeant Coleridge. The daughter of a Wiltshire farmer who rented land at West Lamington, she moved to Byton Farm near Alresford, and it was in Winchester that she met a tea vendor called Allies and fell in love. Her mother Sarah told Mr. Justice Park that a year before they began courting, she asked him about his intentions towards her daughter. He expressed himself as her ardent lover. "I took this to mean that he would take her as his wife as soon as he could dispose of his tea walk and move into another line of business." That very month, however, she became pregnant and he abandoned her. He discontinued his visits and subsequently declined to fulfil his engagements. My daughter received several letters from him, which she rejected. Mrs. Hooper said that those she read were filled with terms of affection and confirmation of their marrying. She then produced one which read, "Dear Mary, at the time of writing this, you will be enjoying a sound sleep. I hope you will enjoy health, happiness and content." Allies, who defended the action, cross-examined her at great length with a view to proving that she was not married to her husband and her daughter had been acting improperly with people in Southampton and Winchester. However, he couldn't call any witnesses about her alleged loose character and declined to address the jury at the end of the evidence. It prompted the judge to tell jurors that the plaintiff had won her case, and it was their task simply to quantify the damages. Following a short retirement, they awarded her the not inconsiderable sum of £150.
And a good news story, entitled Charities Camping Trip Saved. A Winchester charity can now take disadvantaged youngsters on a camping trip, thanks to a cash boost from the Chronicle's parent company. Street Reach has been supporting young disadvantaged people through weekly sessions since 1983. The charity is now set to go on a three-day camping trip this summer at Fairthorne Manor, Botley, thanks to £5,740 from the Gannett Foundation, which is run by Gannett, owners of the Chronicle Publishers NewsQuest. Ben Martin, project manager of Street Reach, said, "The camping trip is the highlight of our year, but we cannot do it without the funding. We were so pleased when we found out we had received the grant. Giving young people opportunities is central to what we do. Stella Bowling, project administrator and fundraiser, added, "It's great we have got the money for the trip. It's a very rewarding job as you get to see their confidence grow." Street Reach currently has 9 part-time youth workers.
Grants for local arts. Over £130,000 has been distributed between Winchester and Eastleigh organisations to maintain local arts, recreation and heritage. The Hampshire County Council grants of £450,000 were announced by Executive Member for Recreation and Heritage, Councillor Sean Woodward. Councillor Woodward said, "Fantastic work goes on every day in Hampshire's communities, thanks to the efforts of those within them. These grants, along with support from local district and parish council funding, have a proven track record of helping a diverse mix of local organisations continue this work on popular, much-loved recreational and learning activities for residents, especially those at risk of isolation. Live Theatre Winchester has received £82,000 to support the wide range of work members do, including the running and management of the Theatre Royal and the Hat Fair, as well as youth theatre. Winnall Community Association received £6,000 to help engage with adults with learning disabilities and to develop a parent and toddler group through interactive and social events. The QE2 Activity Centre in Eastleigh, QE2 Activity Centre in Eastleigh, was given £8,000 to help deliver a range of high-quality daycare and residential opportunities for children and adults with additional needs, including learning disabilities, autism, physical disabilities and sensory impairments. It provides outdoor activities, including climbing, archery, a ropes course and orienteering. The Point in Eastleigh has been granted £40,000 to bolster its work in providing accessible dance for everyone.
Anger at decision to sell off allotments. Village allotments are set to be sold despite residents' opposition. The Diocese of Winchester, which owns allotments in King's Somborne, has confirmed that they will be placed on the market. This comes after residents and civic chiefs in the village launched a petition last year in a bid to save the site, which is more than 100 years old and has been listed as a community asset. The diocese stressed that alternative allotment space will be provided, but residents said they didn't think there was any other suitable site in the area. Lisa Johnson of the King's Somborne Allotment Association said, "Unfortunately, our hands are tied. There's nothing we can do if they're not listening. We're really upset. They're very well used. The diocese had made the decision. We've tried to change their mind. I wish there was something we could do." Sue Holligan, licensed minister at St Peter and St Paul's Church in King's Somborne, said she fears that this will have an impact on the congregation and said the diocese should have put the community first. "In my mind, to be a member of the church is to value people, while here it only seems to be valuing money. The diocese is asset stripping this community by selling the allotments." Tony Ward, councillor for King's Somborne and community and leisure portfolio holder, said if the allotments are sold, alternative allotment site must be provided. "Test Valley Borough Council policy is very clear. They can't build on allotments unless they provide an alternative site," he said. He added, "I think it'll be difficult, but I've asked the allotment users to write down what they think is an equivalent or better site. Until somebody comes forward and says this is what we're proposing, there's nothing we can do." Romsey MP Caroline Noakes has also urged the diocese to specify where they propose to reallocate the allotments and to do so as a matter of urgency. A spokesperson for the diocese said, allotments play an important role at the heart of our local communities. It's exactly for this reason that the Diocese of Winchester provides and supports the allotments at King's Somborne. And this is why we will explicitly require, as a precondition of sale, that any developer of the site provides suitable alternative allotment space. The cost of providing these new allotments will be met by the diocese. The Diocese of Winchester supports over 250 parishes across Hampshire and beyond, and they are reliant on much-needed financial help. As a charity, we are required to make best use of our assets in order to ensure that we can continue to support all our areas of engagement in the local and wider community.
And this one entitled Samaritans to be at City Train Station. Winchester Samaritans volunteers will be on hand at the City Railway Station in an attempt to beat post-Christmas blues. The third Monday of January, January the 21st, is often referred to as Blue Monday, but volunteers from the charity want to rename the date. Members from the Winchester branch will be at the station from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. to talk to commuters and hand out free tea bags as part of a campaign to brand the day Brew Monday. Ian Stevens, Network Rail's Suicide Prevention Manager, said, "Brew Monday is a great opportunity for the rail industry to show its support for Samaritans and the great work they do. Millions of people use the rail network every day, and if through this campaign we can encourage them to talk about their problems over a cup of tea, we will have made a significant contribution to their lives and to the lives of those around them." Winchester Samaritans currently has over 100 volunteers and is located at 13 Upper High Street. Branch Director Anne-Marie Drummond said, "Isolation and loneliness are one of the main reasons that people contact us. So making the effort to talk to a friend or family member who might be finding things difficult can make a huge difference to them."
Relatives of organ donors honoured. Relatives of Hampshire organ donors were invited to honour their late family members at a National Health Service award ceremony. People from across the county who saved lives through post-death organ donation received the Order of St John Award, which was given to their families on their behalf. The private award ceremony was held at the Guildhall in Winchester. Amongst those remembering was Tony Porter from Plateford, near Romsey, who received the award on behalf of his wife, Renee Porter, and Jacqueline Cronin from Southampton, who received the award on behalf of her brother, Philip Howard. Tony Shepherd, head of County Priory Group Affairs, for the Priory of England and the Islands of the Order of St John, said, "We're delighted to be able to work with the NHS Blood and Transplant to run the Organ Donor Awards for a sixth year and to meet the inspirational families attending the ceremonies. Organ donation can clearly save lives, and it is a genuine privilege to be able to say thank you to these families whose loved ones have already donated their organs to save other people's lives. People are still dying every day because some families are not talking about donation. We hope the example set by the organ donors whose lives we are honouring in Hampshire encourages many others to join the NHS Organ Donor Register. It only takes 2 minutes to join the millions of other people who want to save lives. The importance of organ donation was emphasised at the event. Those wishing to join the NHS Organ Donor Register can sign up at www.organdonation.nhs.uk. Anthony Clarkson, Interim Director of Organ Donation and Transplantation at NHS Blood and Transplant, said, "The pride families feel at these ceremonies is inspirational. Transplant patients tell us that organ donors and their families are heroes. This award is a chance for us to all to recognise their bravery and generosity and their amazing contribution to society. More and more people are supporting organ donation, but there is still an urgent shortage of donors. Mr. Clarkson added, "We hope these awards will inspire other people in Hampshire to tell their families they want to save lives. Telling your family what you want makes things easier at a difficult time. Families tell us donation is a source of pride that helps families in their grieving process, and we don't want anyone to miss the opportunity to donate."
Now, it's been several minutes since we mentioned Brexit, so I'm just going to put that right, I'm afraid. Sorry. Businesses respond to Brexit vote. Hampshire business owners are calling for clarity after MPs have rejected Theresa May's Brexit deal. Only 202 MPs supported the withdrawal deal that sets out the terms of Britain's exit from the EU, while 432 MPs voted against it. Hampshire firms are now calling for clarity on the terms of trade they will face in the future, both in Europe and further afield. Responding to Tuesday's vote, Ross McNally, Executive Chairman of Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, said, "Sadly, uncertainty continues. Now the Prime Minister's deal has been rejected, we need to start looking at all the options available to the UK to avoid a messy scenario. It's crucial that Westminster delivers an agreement that works for UK businesses. There's no appetite among the business community for a messy and disorderly Brexit. Businesses are frustrated by the delays. The prospect of leaving the EU on March 29th without a deal leads to many businesses taking action, such as pausing on recruitment and investment, stockpiling goods and opening new operations. This is not helpful if these prove unnecessary." He said business spending money to try and anticipate an unclear future is wasteful and a distraction. The business community said the Chamber of Commerce represents... The business communities which the Chamber of Commerce represents have a diverse range of views on the relationship with the EU, but they do not agree on the need, or they do agree rather, on the need to avoid a messy and disorderly Brexit. "Getting clarity and precision is vital so firms can plan better for the future," said Mr. McNally. He added that businesses want the chapter of Brexit to come to a conclusion. Amen. "The government must act decisively on areas within their control, such as migration and customs procedures. Firms are in the dark on too many aspects of life after March 29th, and neither government nor business is prepared for the consequences of no deal."
And now yet another B word, but not Brexit, I'm pleased to say. This one is entitled Bar Reopening. A former city centre bar and restaurant looks set to be brought back to life by a new business. Piquant, which had been based in Winchester High Street, closed in October with a notice on its doors telling customers the locks had been changed due to, quotes, non-payment of rent. Now, a poster has appeared in the window of the vacant unit, advertising for staff to join the Roxbury. A corresponding Facebook page has also recently been set up, suggesting that it will reopen in the near future as a venue for street food, live music and a wide selection of event nights to cater for everyone. The Chronicle has attempted to contact the Roxbury, but further details were not available at the time of going to press.
Potential Silver Hill names listed. Civic chiefs will meet next week to discuss possible names for a part of Winchester currently undergoing a major revamp. Winchester City Council is yet to pick a name for the city centre area involved in the Central Winchester Regeneration CWR project. Currently common, referred to as Silver Hill. According to a report due to go before the CWR committee on Tuesday, January 22nd, a list of suggestions has been compiled, which will be posted online and be included in the next broadsheet update. Residents will be asked to comment and possibly add to the list. A short list will then be drawn up for the committee, who will pick the names. The list of names currently includes Riverside, Silver Hill, Friarsgate, Tannery Place, Bronze Hill, SO23, The Prism, Cultural Quarter, Water Quarter, Wool Staplers, The Tannery, Silver Hill 2, Alfred's Gate, Alfred's Backyard, Alfie's Backyard, Winchester Deserves Better, Gold Hill, Alfred Quarter, The Central Quarter, Saxon Quarter, Anglo-Saxon Experience, The Friars Gate Development, Friars Brook Place, Saxon Gate, Alfred's Place, Alfred's View, Juliana de la Flood. Councillors will also receive an update on the progress of the scheme at next week's meeting, according to the report. In addition, they will be asked to approve a design brief for improvements to the Lower High Street and Broadway areas. The report states that an initial feasibility study into these improvements will cost £60,000, while the scheme as a whole is estimated to cost an estimated £2 million as a whole.
I don't think we'll vote amongst the four of us. We'll end up with four different answers.
Oh. Yes, well, new reception area unveiled. Civic chiefs have unveiled Winchester City Council's new reception area following a revamp. The Colebrook Street facility has now been upgraded to include new cash kiosks, and residents seeking support on planning, housing, licensing and benefit payments will be able to use upgraded consultation areas. It's hoped that the improvements will reduce waiting times. Portfolio holder for customer services, Councillor Godfrey, opened the new reception centre and he said, "People don't want to have their time taken up by simple tasks, which is why we're making their transactions with us so much simpler. Our new kiosks will allow people to make quick payments, while those needing more support will have improved privacy in the upgraded consultation areas. This is the first of a series of measures we're taking that will make it easier for our customers to conduct business with the council. We've already moved a number of our services online, and it won't be long until the rest follow." Charity Citizens Advice Winchester District is also relocating next to the council reception area from its previous base on St George's Street.
Going out of town a bit, this one is entitled Landowners Promote Sites. Civic chiefs in Alsford will meet next week to discuss a Winchester City Council list of potential development sites, which includes Perrin School. It comes after the SHELA, that stands Strategic Housing and Employment Land Availability Assessment, list was published last month as part of Winchester City Council's work to produce a local plan for up to 2036. The document allows landowners around the district to promote their sites, although they may never actually be used, and includes space for 323 homes. Although the plans are yet to be discussed by Alsford Town Council, City Councillor for Alsford and the Itchen Valley, Kim Gottlieb, gave the list a cautious welcome. Councillor Gottlieb said, "I've always been in favour of spreading the policy quota in suitable locations around town, rather than plonking virtually all of it on Sun Lane. As new policy is formed, some of the SHELA sites are a tad speculative. But with the right density, design and mix of housing, most of them could work, although not all will be needed. The key issues are sensitivity to location and affordability. To keep Alsford thriving, it must maintain its charm whilst being available to all groups of residents and their families. As previously reported, the Sun Lane development will see up to 320 homes built on land to the east of the town. It was approved last June, but was hugely controversial amongst residents. Among the list of SHELA sites was playing field land at Perrin Secondary School. If the site was used for housing, it could accommodate 16 homes. A spokesman for Perrins said the land was of little use to the academy. Clive Surrey, business manager, said it is little used and was furthest away from the main school complex. It was only large enough for a Year 7 game of rugby, he said. In recent years, the school has used the rugby facilities at nearby Albury Park. Mr. Surrey said, "This submission was done a while ago, and for a small plot of land at the end of our playing fields, it is not something we are going to do anything with in the near future. We are keeping our options open. It is something we may not progress. We have not spoken to anybody, no architects, consultants or developers." A spokesman for Alsford Town Council confirmed it would be discussing the list at its meeting on Tuesday, January the 22nd, and declined to comment before then. However, Winchester City Council and Alsford Town Councillor Margot Power said, "The site on Perrins adjoins Bridge Road. It is outside the development boundary and therefore would only be considered for an exception site. I am always happy to look at affordable housing where we can restrict residency to local families." Other potential Alsford development sites featured in the Sheila list include 100 homes at Thodies and 54 at Netherbourne, both off New Farm Road and currently in use as farmland, 68 homes on farmland off Drove Lane, and 6 where the Bridge Road Scout Hut is currently located. Land was also listed for 68 homes next to Albury Park. An outline planning application for up to 60 homes on this land was submitted in 2016 but was refused. The plans proved divisive amongst residents and planners throughout the scheme because it was deemed to be detrimental to the countryside, didn't feature any affordable housing, and local schools would not be able to cope with the population rise.
Man released. A man arrested after 12 wheelie bins were set on fire in Winnell has been released by police under investigation. The 31-year-old from Winchester, who has not been named, was detained on suspicion of causing criminal damage. 10 bins in Winnell Manor Road, 1 in Shepherd's Road and 1 in Longfield Road were set ablaze in the early hours of January the 7th. Anyone with information on the fires should call 101, quoting crime number 44190006988.
Japanese cafe. Plans have been submitted to turn a former Winchester independent shop into a Japanese cafe. The proposal will see the former Reeds of Winchester store in St Thomas Street renovated to become Bento Factory. It comes after Reeds of Winchester, a specialist sewing and clothes repair business, moved above Old Fashioned Sweetie Shop in the High Street. According to the plans, Bento Factory would offer Japanese food as well as drinks and cafes made on site. It will be open between 7:30 a.m. and 6 p.m, 7 days a week. A decision is expected next month.
Girl 16 had knife in public place. A teenage girl has been convicted of illegally possessing a knife in Winchester. The 16-year-old, who cannot be named for legal reasons, was stopped by police on Station Hill on July 25th last year, magistrates in Basingstoke heard. She admitted the charge and was given a 9-month order to work with the Hampshire Youth Offending Team. Magistrates also ordered her to pay a £20 victim surcharge.
Well, that concludes the extracts for this week, so thank you to our editors, Liz and Gordon Clegg. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Claire Porter.
Bye.
Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
And Peter Walker.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.